Welcome to episode 317 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on robotics and automation. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
We are slowly building a robot.
Yeah, yes, and this is rather a wet robot, or at least water. Let's talk about water.
Why?
Let's talk about moving water.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we were talking about mining and metals last time.
Yeah.
And the thing about mines is water gets in them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the only reason to move water around. In India.
Right.
In the Indus River. Come on.
Indus.
This is going to be a great episode. I can tell already.
God, I'm excited.
Indus River Valley.
Okay.
They found the ruins of a palace.
Uh-huh.
Dated to somewhere between 3000 and 4000 BC.
Holy crap.
And inside of that palace, they found copper tubing.
You're kidding me.
For indoor plumbing.
There's a quote. I can't say it. Family friendly.
Right. Pump the right out of your house. Okay, see?
You can beep yourself live. It's
great. Yeah, well, I didn't beep. I suppose I could. Did I mention I wanted to keep this short today?
I'm helping.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm sorry. Okay.
Lots of early cultures had various kinds of move water out of the area and right. Get rid of waste. Sometimes it's just basically trenches, maybe lined with pottery or ceramic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess those are the same thing, actually. Or clay pipes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that sort of thing. People who really got into plumbing were the Romans.
Aha, uh-huh, yes.
They had aqueducts that at one time moved more than 1.2 million gallons of water over 57 miles every day.
Jeez.
And it's a factoid that looks a lot like a back of the napkin calculation to me, but lots of water.
Mm-hmm.
Water seeks its own level.
Yeah.
You've heard this thing, right? If you've got like kind of a hose and you put some water in it, then it'll hang out towards the bottom.
Yeah.
And on either side, it'll crawl up a little bit and be at the same level on either side.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how you move the hose.
Mm-hmm.
This came in handy for the Romans, because occasionally they're building an aqueduct across a valley that's too far across to just use a big old bridgey archy thingy.
But they did that too, didn't
they? Oh, absolutely, they did that too.
But too big, okay.
Yeah. So you could take a pipe down, and then in the middle... And then all the way back up the other side, and as long as it was sealed, the water would seek its own level and crawl back up to the other side of the valley.
Okay.
As long as it's lower than the source of the water.
Okay, yeah.
You can go uphill all you want, as long as it ends up draining low enough. Now, you get a lot of pressure when you're doing that sort of thing. They had to use pipes, metal pipes.
Oh.
Especially in the middle of these sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah.
They made them out of lead.
Oh, problem.
Yes. In fact, the word plumber comes from plumba, which is the Latin word for lead.
Okay.
We've moved away from lead piping for reasons.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah.
That all happened around 200 BC.
Oh.
So that's water flowing downhill, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get it uphill, you need some kind of pump.
Okay.
And there's so many kinds of pumps from so many time periods that I'm just going to do my favorite.
Okay.
The chain pump.
Okay.
For the Babylonian, earliest known references is some text from 700 BC.
Okay.
You have a chain.
Yes, we do.
And you have a pipe.
Okay.
And you make the chain into a loop.
Okay.
So it goes down on the outside of the pipe and back up through the middle of the pipe.
Okay.
And spaced along lengths of this chain, you have things.
Thank goodness for things.
Anything that at all that will clog the pipe and get dragged up.
Okay.
So it can be wads of cloth, it can be discs or balls or anything. There's even a version that just uses rope, not even a chain, where they just tie fat knots.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Spaced along it. Yeah, and you can use that. They have drawings of it being operated by a human or an ox. Or Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
If I ever invent a unit of measure, it'll be Conan's.
Conan O'Brien will be very glad to hear that.
This will take 50 Conans. Then we got the suction pump.
Okay.
You've drank water through a straw before.
Oh, yes.
Right. So the water is climbing up above its level.
Yeah, it's weird.
Magic.
Mm-hmm.
So what is actually happening is that you lower the pressure by expanding your mouth cavity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tongue and soft palate and so forth.
It's amazing.
And then the air pressure pushes the water up the straw.
Mm.
This means there's actually a limit, because once the water in the tube is too heavy, air pressure can't push it up anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's around 32 to 35 feet is about as high as you can get.
Huh. Okay.
There's another trick you can do.
Okay.
To get water to go above its own level, at least temporarily.
Okay.
Called a siphon.
Okay. That's better than what I thought. I'm like, grab a bucket and throw.
That also works.
Okay. Anyway.
So you got a tube full of water.
Okay.
And you stick one end in your source tank.
Okay.
Make sure that the tube is under the level of the source tank water or it won't work at all.
Right.
And then you can go up to about 30 feet or so, and then back down.
Okay.
It's water trying to seek its own level, but it seems to get an assist from air pressure to be able to go up that 30, 35 feet or so.
Oh, okay.
That's how a siphon works.
Okay.
And it doesn't require a pump or anything. Gravity is doing everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
That model works. It certainly is true, but there's more to the story. Because water is weird.
Yes, it is.
Which we talked about.
Ah, yes, we did.
On Monday.
H2O.
Oh, so this is a wet episode. Wepisode.
That's a wet episode.
It wasn't even on purpose.
With all.
Right, so back in the day,
mm-hmm.
your holy man went up to his pot of boiling lead.
Mm-hmm.
Or boiling, not boiling. Molten.
Molten. Molten.
Boiling is much hotter lead. lead melts at 327 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
And about 621 degrees Fahrenheit.
Holy crap.
Well, so it's pretty, that's pretty.
As far as metals go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty low temperature, but it'll sear the skin right off your bones.
Yeah.
But the holy man sticks his hands into this stuff.
Oh, okay.
And pulls them back out and is unharmed.
Yes. Look at the miracle.
He cheated.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you bathe your hands in holy water first. And then you can stick your hands in molten lead and pull them back out quickly. Mm-hmm. And the water flashes into steam. And steam is not as good a heat conductor as actually touching the actual metal.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you ever see the droplets of water skittering around on a pan?
Super overheated pan? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, actually, there's a window, a temperature range. Oh. But it is kind of ironic. What happens is the drop of water hits the pan. The bottom of it flashes into steam or water vapor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a little droplet sort of floats around on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I was going to say like an air hockey puck, but I think that's wrong. Yeah, but the ironic thing about this is that at a slightly lower temperature, you can actually put some water in the pan and it will be gone sooner
yeah.
than at the slightly higher temperature.
Water is weird.
Yes, which is what we're talking about right now. Weird water. And we're going to get a little fringy here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a little fringe science, which makes me uncomfortable.
Apparently.
So water.
Okay.
It's made up of two hydrogens and one oxygen atom.
Indeed. Yeah.
Now, your average atom, it has something in the middle, the nucleus, where the protons live.
Mm-hmm.
For hydrogen, the simplest atom, it's just one proton hanging around there,
mm-hmm.
having a positive electric charge.
Mm-hmm.
And then an electron will hang out with that proton.
Heck yeah.
In the case of hydrogen anyway, just one of each.
Mm-hmm.
The electron has a negative charge.
Heck yeah.
So when they're both hanging out, that's a neutral atom, electrically.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good.
Right.
Over on the oxygen side, we got 8 protons.
Okay.
With some extra neutrons in there to glue the whole thing together.
It's like egg in a sandwich.
Right? Yeah. And then outside of that, egg in a sandwich. Mm. Outside of the egg in the sandwich.
I don't know why egg in the sandwich. Whatever, I'm hungry.
Anyway. It has 8 electrons.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is just to make them electrically neutral.
Right.
There's weird quantum dynamical stuff.
Okay.
That kind of works out to ye olde electron shell theory.
Right.
Atoms like to have a complete outer shell.
Okay, yeah.
Which they can either do by dumping electrons.
Yes.
Or grabbing them.
Okay.
Hydrogen wants 2 electrons.
Okay.
Or none. Either one will do.
Okay.
Oxygen wants two more electrons.
Okay.
And there's no or about it.
Give me. Okay.
So in come a couple of hydrogen atoms, and they end up sharing their electrons with the oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
But the oxygen is holding on to those electrons tighter.
Oh, okay.
So what you end up is an oxygen atom, still in the molecule, with a sort of negative charge to it.
Okay.
Because of those extra electrons. Mm-hmm. And two hydrogens out there with a sort of positive charge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
So this means you can have what they call hydrogen bonds.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm going to simplify hugely here. The oxygen, after it grabs those two electrons from the hydrogens, still has two electrons that aren't bonded to anything.
Okay.
So what can happen is one of these positively charged hydrogens in another water molecule will come along and share that one.
Okay.
Because the hydrogen hasn't really lost its electron, and it kind of wants to.
Okay.
So you end up getting multiple water molecules assembling into various structures, depending upon temperature and pressure, ice being the obvious example.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Because it's cold enough, and those hydrogen bonds get strong enough, and you betcha.
Those are the states of matter, or what is it called?
Phases of matter.
Phases of matter. Thank you.
The oxygens, they have two electrons that are free to bond, so they can grab two hydrogens on that end from other molecules. And the same original water molecule still has two hydrogens on the other end, which can bond to other oxygens. So you can end up with four connections to other water molecules on one water molecule.
Holy crap.
Yes. So, you know, sort of weird tinker toy, strange shapes. Good, that's the easy part.
Okay.
All right. This causes things to happen.
Things.
Yes. Like at the surface of a pond or even a droplet of water, you get a phenomenon called surface tension.
Da-da-da.
Where there's a bunch of hydrogen bonding at the surface.
Demonstrated well by water skippers.
Yes, the little bugs that just run across it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one.
Okay.
It also means you can put out a chunk of water and zero gravity, and it will naturally assume a spherical shape.
Oh, okay.
So it always makes me wonder what things without surface tension do.
Oh, like oil or, well.
Or I don't know what liquids don't have surface tension.
I actually don't. Yeah, yeah.
Water's is unusually strong, though. I saw Mr. Wizard float a steel plate on it. Once, and then, you know, they add a little bit of soap, break the surface tension, it goes bloop.
Yeah.
It also means that there's something called latent heat.
Okay.
It takes extra energy to break those hydrogen bonds and move from, say, ice to liquid.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the same amount of energy to move a given volume of water from 0 degrees to 80 degrees Celsius is needed to turn that volume of water from ice to water.
Oh.
Same thing happens when water evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that steam isn't that good a heat conductor, right?
Yeah, you did.
But if you put your hand over steam, it will condense on your hand.
Okay.
And give up all that extra latent heat.
Oh, no.
Which is why you can put your hands inside of a hot oven and not get burned, and put your hands over a boiling kettle and get burned by the steam.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
So far, so good.
Okay.
This has all been real science
and
taking longer than I expected. And then we get to the, I don't know how to say this name, Membib effect.
Okay.
There's this kid in Tanzania.
All right.
Worked in an ice cream factory.
Okay.
And he noticed that if the container was warm before they put it in the freezer, it seemed to freeze faster than something that had gotten to room temperature.
I've heard of this, yeah.
You've heard of this. He brought it up in class, got laughed out of the room, but a visiting guy went and tried it and found the same effect.
Uh-huh.
Or so the story goes. This is what I mean by fringe science, right?
Okay, gotcha.
So that got published in 1969.
Okay.
And since then, people have been arguing about whether or not it's real.
Okay.
Now, me and a buddy tried it, actually, just put a couple of thermometers. Had water that we brought to a boil and water from a tap, same amount, put them both in the freezer, And we just watched it until it got to freezing.
Okay.
Which wasn't really enough of an experiment. We should have seen which one actually froze faster.
But... what do? You put a camera in the freezer? Or...
I don't know. Good question. Mm. Check it every 5 minutes.
Oh, that's one way. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, some of the theories about how that may or may not work. This is funny. They involve these hydrogen bonds, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One of them is that hotter water has weaker hydrogen bonds.
Okay.
So the notion is the cooler water sitting around forms hydrogen bonds that are the wrong shape to make ice. Mm-hmm. And those have to get broken and reformed correctly.
Okay.
And that doesn't occur when you start with hotter water. It doesn't spend enough time being in that temperature range to make those inconvenient shapes.
Okay.
The other idea being that certain types of structure with hydrogen bonds form at warmer water, and those act to nucleolate ice formation, like crystals in a solution.
Oh, okay.
So they're both using hydrogen bonds and come to completely opposite conclusions. It's either because there's more or less of them, depending.
Interesting.
So I don't know if that effect is even real. But here's another thing water does. It insulates.
Ah, yes.
And the
yes.
purer it is, the more insulation it does. I'm talking electrically. Mm-hmm. You have to pour other stuff into it to make it carry currents.
Yes.
And then other funny things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Air is also a pretty good insulator.
Okay.
But when you've got enough voltage, you get a spark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It breaks down. Dielectric breakdown, if you want the fancy term for it.
Ooh.
The water does the same thing.
Oh.
And sometimes when it does, it apparently explodes.
Holy crap. Well, that can't be good.
When I first heard of this, a guy was firing slugs of metal out of his thingy, fired it through plywood and into hunks of clay.
Mm-hmm.
I looked it up again, and it doesn't seem as spectacular. Maybe they're deliberately using smaller setups.
Okay.
One guy was using up to 14 kilovolts.
Oh, okay. And
this is really fringy science. These are blog posts. I don't know these guys.
All right.
And he found an efficiency between energy put in and momentum gained between 0.1 and 0.3%.
Okay.
So not very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
This other guy had this entirely different setup where after the whole thing had settled down, he checked the temperature.
Okay.
Theorizing whatever energy was put into it should turn into heat eventually.
Okay.
And kept finding a little more heat than was put into it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so a little fringy. Is that even possible? Although he did make the point. He's like, I don't believe in magic energy.
Right.
One of his theories was hydrogen bonds.
They're getting blamed for a lot.
Toilets.
Right.
You don't actually get the ceramic toilet that we know and love until 1870.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of precursors, but, you know, 1870.
Okay.
The toilet.
Yay.
Our toilets, we generally have a tank on the back.
Mm.
And that tank's job is to provide enough water to get it to flush.
Okay.
Because if you just use the in-tank valve, it won't work. Right. It'll just drivel over the...
unwanted contents.
Yeah. You got a handle.
Mm-hmm.
It will move a chain and pull up the flapper valve, which will then sort of float there while water dumps down into the bowl.
Yes.
Around the rim so that the entire surface gets washed until there's enough weight to force the water up and over one little hill and then down... for the little water trap thing that keeps gas from coming back up, and then up again, and then over, and then down. A little S-curve there. It's entirely a siphon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
We were confused because there's another pipe coming from the back of the tank that also drains down the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the overflow pipe.
Yes, indeed.
There's a float valve that will shut off the inflow once the water level reaches a certain area.
Yes.
But it doesn't always work perfectly or at all. In which case...
if it stops working.
You'd rather go down that pipe than, you know, your floor.
Yes, yes.
When we were talking about it before, we both sort of thought that when you flush it, you also got water dumping out the tank straight down.
Mm-hmm.
You even said, water does this thing where it'll grab itself and say, come with me!
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well,
But no, yeah.
Yeah,
well, all to the bowl.
Would that it were that simple. Mm. They have discovered that siphons will work even in vacuum.
Oh.
So where'd that whole air pressure thing go, right?
Okay, yeah, I thought we were in space for a second. But there is gravity. No,
there is gravity. We're okay. Using vacuum pumps to pull this sort of thing off.
Okay.
I've got a couple of links to YouTube videos on thelabwithbrad.com, the show page.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is actually just tap water.
Okay.
It has this little vacuum pump and does the siphon effect. You can't do it for very long. Okay. Because as you lower the air pressure, the boiling point of water lowers.
Oh, right. Also, yes.
And eventually you get like a chunk of steam in the top of that little bend, and now it ain't siphoning no more. Another one, they made what they call ion water.
Interesting.
And they were a little cagey about exactly how this works, but it does not boil off in vacuum.
Oh,
which is magic liquid. I don't know how they pulled that off. And so they were able to do it with a much harder vacuum. And yeah, the siphon effect still worked.
Cool.
So how is this happening?
I don't know.
Some sort of cohesion, right? I think it's a surface tension thing.
Yeah.
Right? Not just the surface of the water with the vacuum or the air or whatever, but the surface along the entire length of the pipe.
Right.
Okay. Right. And, you know, if you take a big tank of water and force it through a skinny little pipe, you're going to drastically increase the amount of surface area that will be doing the surface tension magic.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, it's magic.
Yes.
The funny thing about this is that your idea that water can grab itself and just say, come with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, a new siphons would, you know, siphoning a tank of gas as an example, you get that mouthful and then you let go.
Classically, everybody's considered it to be air pressure, but, you know, lately, since about the 1990s, they've been doing experiments and going, well, that's not the whole story. It doesn't need air pressure to work. Mind you, the tube has to be smooth and clean, which also supports the tension, surface tension theory. Yeah, because bumps would break the surface tension.
Yeah. In a vacuum. I'm lost over here.
In a vacuum. Speaking of vacuums.
Uh-huh.
Hey, there's something called a vacuum pump.
Right.
Which was just ridiculously important to the march of science and technology.
Okay.
Which we're going to talk about
Hey.
Next time. See you then.
Bye.